Welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is episode 44 for December 29th, 2017. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial, with friends like these. It's that holiday time of the year again, where things seem to slow down a bit for a moment and we try and look back on the year in review. This has, without a doubt, been the year of the Antifa, and all the social media posts, podcasts, book reviews, and interviews are full of the pundits pontificating, making, and selling their latest books of concisely curated content. One such writer who recently dropped their new book into the marketplace of ideas is Shane Burley, who describes himself as a filmmaker, educator, and writer. Going alongside the book, he published 25 theses on fascism via the Institute for Anarchist Studies, which was shared as a story on A-News recently. Paul Z. Simmons wrote a response text, and then Alexander Reed Ross wrote a rejoinder to Simmons, coming to the side and perspective of Burley. Among Burley and Reed Ross, Mark Bray also seems to be the other big name in writing about Antifa, fascism, and the surrounding world of ideas for an anarchist audience. I haven't had the time to digest the writings of Burley, Reed Ross, and Bray, but as a fellow traveler, I mean, they're anarchists, right? I'm sure there's a lot of good things to digest within the respective texts. I'm sure there are also some things I may strongly disagree with. For example, A-News is directly called out by Reed Ross in their rejoinder text as being an infiltration point for anarcho-fascist tendencies. Quote, fascism in its earlier phases relies on insulating itself within some cultures and left-wing factions to grow. Those tendencies must remain actively aware of these basics or else fall prey to its machinations. Unquote. So basically, what I understand from this statement, because honestly it seems confusing enough in its own, is that the people behind A-News, which includes yours truly, are in bed with anarcho-fascists. Or worse, we are the anarcho-fascists? Jesus. Well, thanks for letting me know. Taken another way, could not the exact same statement cover every single anarchist website space in the world theater? What's so specific about A-News that you really dislike? Be honest. For one, I'm not sure I've heard a bigger oxymoron recently than the term anarcho-fascist. An anarchist that is a fascist? Well, I'm sorry, but that just doesn't make much sense, similar to the much maligned and totally contradictory term of anarcho-capitalist. Perhaps I'm taking things too literal in my reading and need to be more creative like you. Two, if these people who are calling themselves anarcho-fascists believe they're anarchists, which they're not, why are you giving them the benefit of the doubt by using their terminology? Three, why are you lumping A-News, which is a non-sectarian anarchist news site, into the likes of people we all despise? Why is it that other anarchists hating on A-News so much also seem like the most partisan actors in everything they do and at the same time extremely popular? Is that how you sell books? 2017 could also be the year in review of anarchists attacking other anarchists, but I'm pretty sure that happens every year, unfortunately. Not only is it sad to hear A-News and projects you work on and put your heart into attacked, but it's also extremely upsetting to see it being done by other so-called anarchists with an axe to grind. Critique is healthy, but this kind of mudslinging is just lazy, asinine, sectarian, capital P for politics. Well, I've never spoken personally to Reed Ross. I have had the overwhelming displeasure of having a private conversation with some other well-known Antifa writers, where I absolutely was shocked by their opinions of other very successful and popular anarchist projects. And I'm not talking about A-News anymore. I wonder if they know that their publisher, AK Press, has also published some other writers who we may deem bad. Among the handful, do you know that Noam Chomsky recently gave a bunch of money to Bernie Sanders? I recently learned that Chomsky's co-writer of Manufacturing Consent, Edward S. Herman, who just passed away, held some controversial positions on Srebrenica massacre. Where is the outrage? This is mostly a tongue-in-cheek critique to make a point about the complexities of everything. I actually don't mind AK Press, but seriously, this kind of drama is a huge turnoff for people coming into anarchism and those of us who have been here for many years. Just tiring and a distraction to who the real enemy is. Let's dig a little deeper and visit another controversy from some years ago that has recently been brought up on our Twitter feed. In George Cicciarello Maher's 2014 essay for Roar magazine entitled El Libertario, Beware Venezuela's False Anarchists, he wrote, quote, "Not everyone who calls themselves anarchists are worthy of the name. And before revolutionaries in the U.S. or elsewhere repost articles, translate books, or organize speaking tours, we should be clear what it is we are supporting, especially in Latin America. Moreover, we must be attentive to the thousands engaged in revolutionary anti-state activity that don't even call themselves anarchists. To support middle-class liberal anarchists like El Libertario is to be against revolution, against concrete popular struggles of the Venezuelan poor, and even against anarchism itself," unquote. Soon after, in 2014, longtime anarchist writer Charlton Stew responded herein, quote, "In the midst of the flood of conflicting sources of information and analysis, one of the collective members of the new journal, Abolition, a journal of insurgent politics, George Cicciarello Maher's recently wrote an article titled El Libertario, Beware, Venezuela's False Anarchists. It is not irrelevant that Cicciarello Maher is unashamedly Chavista government and Bolivarian revolution supporter, as is clear from his book, We Created Chavez, A People's History of the Venezuelan Revolution, and several articles and interviews. Reading what he writes, it becomes clear that we cannot take him seriously as a significant critic of centralized rule from the top down, nor as an advocate of anarchist goals or methods of egalitarian self-governance from the bottom up. The article is meant to convince us of the revolutionary credentials of the state he supports by discrediting El Libertario in the eyes of anarchists and anti-authoritarians, and to convince us that those false anarchists are endangering this good state and the gains made through it," unquote. In all of this, who do you believe? I can honestly say I'm not well-versed enough in the Venezuelan space to tell exactly who is being the most dishonest here. Cicciarello Maher is pretty well-respected professor who just left their job, and Charlton Stew is a longtime writer who also seems to make some convincing points. I'm sure many people already have their minds made up and have chosen their side in the battle of ideas between the good and bad anarchists. Obviously, I have my research cut out for me. Maybe I'll write a book about it. I guess that's 2017 for me. Well, to the hate factory, where people on the same team treat their co-conspirators like the enemy. Of course, this is not everyone, but I must say it feels more and more prevalent nowadays, at least online, than the previous occasional snide comment in a meeting somewhere. Happy New Year, everybody! Baby, I've been tripping off from Tommy up and send them off it. I've been on a mission for it. I just want my own apartment. I just want a space with my old best friend. Lock me in your cellular, won't elevate to me. Baby, I've been tripping off from Tommy up and send them off it. I've been on the... What's new this week? Below and beyond Trump. Power and counterpower in 2017. From Black Rose Federation. This is a, quote, strategy and analysis document prepared by members of the BRRN Analysis and Strategy Committee and approved by the membership, unquote. Interestingly, the people who believe in organization think that there is plenty of reason that these times call for more organization, with charts. Quote, the U.S. ruling class is experiencing a political crisis the likes of which it hasn't seen in decades. The basis of the crisis are serious tactical divisions within U.S. ruling class interests around domestic control and stewardship.
the decline of U.S. global hegemony, looming structural crisis stemming from the limits of neoliberal policy, the coming climate catastrophe, as well as deep-seated and wide-ranging popular discontent. Furthermore, recent challenges to white supremacy have forced ruling elites to respond, making their internal political crisis more difficult to manage. We've reached a point where the center can't hold. The ideological glue of centrist politics is coming apart, and significant segments of the population are polarizing, heading further left and further right for alternatives, reflecting a broader pattern on a global scale. Unquote.
My date was Sam Dolgoff, a memory of old-timey New York City anarchy, from Paul Z. Simons. A sweet reminiscence of a personal connection with a notable anarchist that crosses political and age divides. Would be nice to hear more of these kinds of memories from a broader swath of folks, too. Quote, I asked to use the bathroom and Esther pointed me in the right direction. As I walked back through the hallway, I began to notice the paintings and drawings on the wall. They were not the usual saccharine depictions of pastoral or city scenes that one glimpses on the walls of most elderly folks' dwellings. These were drawings of barricades, a man brandishing a lit Molotov, bands of people marching in demonstrations, a portrait of Kropotkin. This was an anarchist home and a proud one at that, unquote.
LSC Statement on Sample Bylaws from the Democratic Socialists of America Libertarian Socialist Caucus. And more organization for the organizationalists. This is a piece from the more anarchisty in the DSA, complaining about an attempted power grab. Quote, it was left to the National Political Committee to draft these new mandatory sample bylaws, and it was generally assumed they would follow the same unobjectionable and minimalist pattern of past sample bylaws. However, for reasons that seem tied to the NPC's recent drive to incorporate individual chapters of DSA as nonprofits, the sample bylaws they recently released for comment on a small listserv of local DSA chapter leaders are an extensive change from precedent. They contain centralizing, top-down, and authoritarian provisions which are unheard of in any previous sample bylaws or, indeed, in the bylaws of nearly any currently existing DSA chapters. What's worse, they were released without much transparency as to the process of their creation in the middle of the busy holiday season, with very little time for review and debate before their adoption by the NPC at the end of January. Many of the comments on the bylaws already enumerate these complaints in detail. Unquote. The title of this piece should have been, Ah, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal.
Belarus. New campaign of solidarity for anarchist political prisoner Dmitry Polyanko. From Insurrection News. Quote, we are social activists and friends of Dmitry Polyanko, and we are starting a new year campaign of solidarity with the Belarusian prisoner of conscience. Please send a postcard with some words of support to Dmitry. You can also post a photo of your postcard on social media and use the hashtag #free_Polyanko. It should be recalled that in October 2016, Dmitry Polyanko was sentenced to 2 years suspended prison sentence for allegedly assaulting a police officer during a critical mass cycling demonstration in Minsk. This spring, Dmitry was arrested again. The court overturned the suspended sentence and sent him to serve the sentence in Babrushk prison colony, unquote.
Uruguay for a Black December from Insurrection News. Quote, our call once again is for action. Action against those who try to dominate our lives, against those who try to make our lives a misery, against those who have imposed a role of power for their own benefit, against those who we know full well have names and addresses. With this opportunity and with our actions, we want to remember our comrades who fell in combat against domination and domestication. Alexandros Grigoropoulos, Sebastian Oversluij. We remember them with every slogan we shout, with every wall we mark, with every window we smash, and with every wall we want to tear down from this society that perpetuates the violence imposed by the state. Unquote.
Sebastian Oversluij, Segul, lives in all expropriations and attacks on power, Chile. From Act for Freedom Now, quote, the morning of 11th December 2013, Comrade Sebastian Oversluij was preparing to expropriate a bank in the municipality of Parahuel. Comrade Angry went into the bank, took out a submachine gun, and announced the assault. A miserable security guard shot our comrade and killed him instantly. The bastard in uniform was a trained soldier and had vast experience as a mercenary in Haiti and Iraq. We agree with the comrades' decision to expropriate the rich. We recognize ourselves as enemies of capital and the system of domination that generates and spreads the miseries we experience every day. We encourage any direct attack on the property and interests of the rich. We are part of the multiform war against power, unquote.
Surviving a grand jury from Crime Think. One of the things that Crime Think does best, this is a valuable gathering of information about grand juries and real-life stories by people who resisted them. Grand juries are a mysterious and even more intimidating than usual aspect of the legal system, and thinking about what to do before you get called up continues to be an excellent and underutilized practice. Quote, grand juries suspend Fifth Amendment rights. They can subpoena you and give you immunity in order to force you to testify. If you refuse, they can jail you for up to 18 months. This immunity does not protect you from prosecution. It only stipulates that the information you personally provide cannot be used against you, although the same information provided by someone else can be. All this explains why people who do not want to be complicit in enabling the state to persecute communities refuse to give any information to a grand jury whatsoever. You never know what detail might be used against someone else. Even if no one is guilty of any crime, providing information to a grand jury can result in ongoing legal harassment that can ripple out and affect many people, unquote.
Transphobia is a class issue, from Anarchist Feminist, a blog by an anarchist, trans feminine person working in STEM who is currently studying for a PhD in statistical modeling and engineering. Quote, Lisa Milbank discusses real-life experience, RLE, a period of time in which trans people are expected to present full-time as their gender in order to access certain kinds of healthcare, as a form of socially enforced breaking in, which trans women are subjected to an experience of public freakhood composed of constant stares, transphobic harassment, and potentially violence, without access to much of the intensely double-edged training given to cissexual women on how to survive this. While Milbank focuses on the experience of transsexual women in particular, this also applies to some extent to the experience of other trans people. Unquote. The blog author, Sadie, is present on the comment thread, which is always nice.
International text call, Anarcho-Syndicalism and Intersectionality. From SEDAS, ASCED, a.k.a. Anarcho-Syndicalist Collective for Education and Diffusion. Quote, this theme aims to highlight the practices and struggles of anarcho-syndicalists today to get rid of a certain image and cliché that we might have, that of a movement of white heterosexual settler men. Is it possible to focus on the struggles of the working class on an anarchist anti-oppressive basis today? How do you integrate the emancipation of oppressed groups in the struggles of the popular movements, and more particularly in the anarcho-syndicalist struggles / groups? Can we develop a revolutionary anarcho-syndicalist perspective in specific struggles? Unquote, asking all the best questions.
The Anarchist Alternative in Cuba, from Fifth Estate, in the newest issue, number 399, by Bill Weinberg. Quote, this April, I returned to Cuba for the first time in 24 years, on assignment to look into the ecological alternative on the island and how it has fared since the end of what was called in official government parlance the special period that began in 1989. I found an island transformed since those days of crisis, with some elements of the ecological model surviving and others abandoned. But the trip afforded me the opportunity to witness other alternatives, an emergent anarchist network seeking to advance anti-authoritarian ideas as the dictatorship begins to tentatively open up, unquote. Interesting to get the perspective of someone who's been around for a while.
Actions of Insurrection in Denmark, Attacks on the Web of Oppression, from Act for Freedom Now. Quote, it is clear that attacking one single piece of this devilish order is insufficient. Even though specific sectors, companies, and individuals generally are considered more important for this order to be upheld and amalgamated, we must not be fooled. An attack on every oppressive element is crucial because even the smallest agents have a major role to play in the perpetuation of the existent. True, in the current state of things, violent action against all kinds of inequality and anti-freedom is far from given. At the very least, however, we insist upon the fact that ideally, nothing and no one authoritarian are to be spared. Indeed, there must be no guarantee for safety, no excuses for being an oppressor, and no security measures able to act as an ironclad defense against the war waged by revolutionary anarchists. every oppressor can get hit at any time, unquote. Maybe I'm just too ensconced in looking at a toss of two, but this sounds sympathetic to eco-extremism to me.
The Undying State, an anarchist examination of 2018, from It's Going Down. From the declaration that there are only two possibilities, oppression or freedom, to the use of anarchist when activist would be more accurate, to the confusingly formatted subheaders, this is an irritating essay. Lots of talk about Democrats versus Republicans, the tax plan, etc. Quote, the question is this, by the end of 2018, will the anarchist movement or any anti-authoritarian movement have the capacity to help the people? Most citizens in the United States do not identify with any leftist cause, and hyperpartisanship has produced a population which cannot grasp its own sense of power outside of the authority of the two major parties. Americans at large cannot wait for convincing political arguments. Fascism is here, and economic and climate disasters are on the way. Yet at the root of each problem is the state, the constantly repressive entity that engineers our suffering for a profit, unquote. The attempt to distill lessons for anarchists from current events is, of course, valid, even maybe important, but getting politicians confused for current events is where I would argue this one out.
Beyond anti-fascism, but not without it, from the Institute for Anarchist Studies. Not to sound like I'm holding a grudge or anything, but over a year ago, a friend tried to have a public conversation that was called something very close to the title of this essay and got shut down hard by anti-fascist assholes on social media. Quote, we need analysis and historical contextualization of fascism and anti-fascism, but we also need analysis and historical contextualization of its relationship to longstanding anti-racist resistance and decolonization efforts. We need to talk about how institutionalized forms of white supremacy connect to the racism and imperialism of U.S. world interventions. We need to understand what's different and distinct about the present moment, while also understanding its intersections and continuities in order to provide fuller perspective and therefore a more effective ability to fight back. Unquote. You know, like my friend was going to try to do. I'm not super stoked about this essay, although it has some valid points, because it still takes too much for granted, but mostly I'm still pissed off. So yeah, still holding a grudge. Too bad for me.
Greece, powerful bomb blast rocks the Athens Court of Appeals. From Insurrection News. Quote, a powerful bomb blast exploded outside the Athens Appeals Court in the early hours of Friday morning, causing extensive damage to the building and forcing the court's closure for the day with all cases suspended. Nobody was injured in the bombing. A warning call to police gave them 40 minutes to evacuate the court and surrounding area, which is located right near Athens police headquarters, unquote.
Chile, bombs case 2. Juan found guilty, Natalie and Enrique acquitted of all charges, Enrique rearrested following his release. From Insurrection News. Quote, the court case also highlighted the continuing incongruities, contradictions, and scientific delusions of the DNA experts whose evidence ended up being inconsequential to the outcome. The bullshit expertise of the Labocar scientific police only ended up proving the intentional and directed use of their skills to support the views of the accusers. Unquote.
Santiago, Chile, coordinated incendiary attacks against Banco Estado branches in memory of anarchist nihilist comrade Sebastian Oversluge. From Insurrection News. Three incendiary devices in a single night. Quote, at the scenes of the three incendiary attacks, leaflets were found in memory and remembrance of the anarchist comrade Sebastian Oversluge, which were not shown or mentioned by the media. We recall that the anarchist nihilist Sebastian Oversluge participated in the bank robbery of a Banco Estado branch in the Putahuel commune on December 11, 2013. After entering the Temple of Capitalist Accumulation, armed with a submachine gun, the miserable bank guard William Vera repelled the assault by killing our anarchist comrade, unquote.
Santiago, Chile. Anarchist comrade Enrique Guzman back on the street after being rearrested. From Insurrection News. After 2.5 years, Guzman was released. Once he arrived at home, the police arrested him again for the cowardly accusations made by the miserable Matias Peña Leon, a plaintiff lawyer in the case, who alleged that the comrade approached him after the trial and made death threats. The trembling lawyer denounced the comrade to try and stop him being released. The petty lapdog did not feel ashamed to say that he felt threatened, because even though he is backed by the full apparatus of the state, he feels violated by any gesture other than resignation from those who are on the dock. Unquote. He spent the night back in jail and is now out again.
Media. https://anti-civ.net. This is an announcement for a restartup of anticiv.net, used to be anticiv.org. Quote, https://anti-civ.net is for everyone who's beginning to question the very roots of everyday life and its reproduction, and for those who have simply had enough of this shit, and for everyone in between. Hell, even anti-civ trolls who want to point out that wearing glasses is hypocritical transhumanism or whatever are somewhat welcome, provided that they're at the very least amusing, unquote.
For Kataina Gagou from Autonomies, quote, this is a biography of Greece's greatest anarchist poetess, Katerina Gagou, 1940 to 1993. Until today, Gagou remains the bête noire of modern poetry in Greece, with only one poetic anthology, including her groundbreaking heretical work. However, her poems have become an indivisible part of the radical culture of the country and of the public imaginary of Exarchia. Recently, a biography of Katerina Gagou, titled Katerina Gagou, Death's Love, Eratos Thanato, appeared, authored by Agapi Virginia Spirito, 2007, Athens, based on her doctoral thesis. However, no study or history of Katerina Gagou's involvement in the anarchist struggle of the 1980s has ever been published in Greek, leaving a great gap in both the history of the movement and in the biography of the poetess, unquote. Trigger warning, this post includes poetry.
Podcasts, TFS Radio, Resisting Fascists in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Some Perspectives on the CDC's Seven Words, 1 hour and 4 minutes. Sean Swain starts at 2:20, and his topic is happiness as a limited perspective to take on life, and one that is deeply connected to marketing, at least these days. Sean continues to be fucking exemplary. The first interview starts at 8 minutes, and it's Bursts talking to Soy about the threatened protest by a nationalist group in Charlotte, which may have been canceled, but may happen anyway. They discuss Pinochet and the group ACA and the idea of anti-communism as a cover for fascist perspectives. The second interview starts at 34 minutes and is William talking to two anarchist healthcare workers about the impact of banned words on healthcare.
December 26, 2017, Anarchy Radio, 1 hour, a consistent, complaining voice in a changing world.
Topic of the week, creative holiday avoidance. Some of us don't do Christmas. Some of us have rejected holidays as obligatory time with loved ones, TM, etc., and just hide in our homes, avoiding commercials and sappy music, or only listen to touring sappy music, which can be awesome. Some of us just bare-knuckle it every year, avoiding calls from our families as the year draws to a close, while others have clearly and decisively said no and don't get harassed anymore. What is your most creative way to deal with this and other seasons of obligatory merrymaking and family time and saccharine eggnog, etc.? Give us hints, or just tell us funny stories about things you've tried that worked or didn't.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I guess like one assumption is that with this topic of the week is that everybody hates being with their family. And that's not always the case, but it's often the case, I guess, with anarchists. Yeah.
Are you saying that that's not the case for you?
Well, I think for me, yeah, I usually dislike the regular Christmas rituals and stuff. I mean, I've had some of these experiences of like doing the routine ritual things that everyone does that have been enjoyable for me, but then other times, most of the time, it's not. And yeah, in the past, you know, I've thought about this and I have done like a variety of things, like some of which include like avoiding family altogether and just hanging out with friends and enjoying being with friends. I remember, yeah, I've spent one Christmas like just yeah, by choice, just by myself, and totally, yeah, I wasn't quite ready for that, and it was kind of like a lonely, isolated thing. I've spent some Christmases like just like totally like high on drugs in a totally different reality in that sense. And I had one Christmas actually in which I was with family, and I decided to like try to have a direct, real, you know, no bullshit conversation. Just like, what are we doing together here? Like, what the hell is our family? Yeah, you know, and it was stunning, you know, and everybody was shocked. And I think everybody still remembers that. And I think, you know, if I had pursued that kind of way of being with our family, of like, let's cut the bullshit, let's get real with each other, and been that way with them persistently, consistently, that could have maybe changed in a radical way our family dynamics. But I just didn't have the interest and stamina to kind of keep going with that. And so, you know, next time I saw them, it was the same old family bullshit stuff. But yeah, so I've done a variety of things. And yeah, I don't know, like, what works for people or not. I think probably just, yeah, and I think some people have already talked about this in the comments of, like, just avoiding family and hanging out with friends and do whatever you enjoy doing with your friends is probably the most safe way to go.
Yeah, I think that at the heart of this is a central question about, do we accept the premise that as anarchists we've decided to take on a countercultural lifestyle, which I think used to be, you know, very much the assumption, and obviously most of us involved in the anarchist news have made that decision. But I think a lot of younger people have not, and they still are very much connected to and interconnected with their family. And so this option doesn't really even come up. It doesn't just not exist. It just sort of like doesn't make sense because their family is part of their life. I sort of feel like the, you know, the other part of this premise is, or sort of question or assumption, is that anarchists have as a implicit or explicit desire the idea of recreating some familial aspects within their radical community. And so, you know, you definitely see this in the context of like radical seders and, you know, un-Thanksgiving sort of events. Christmas, of course, is not exactly one that anarchists sort of like know how to respond to. But it does seem like, you know, part of the question is, when does friends become something that looks more like family? And are we doing that, or should we be doing that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, because I have heard like conversations, people saying, what we should be doing as anarchists is have your own chosen family.
Right.
Yeah, not a bio family necessarily. And I think that could work, but I've also had a number of experiences over the years, you know, with people that I thought, yeah, these people are my chosen family, and then, you know, as years go by, we drift apart, and turns out that, oh, you don't have this lifelong bond that I thought we had.
So. Yeah, I hate to say it, but, you know, a large part of my quote-unquote chosen family are my roommates. And, you know, it doesn't take much to sort of say that I live with about 9 people. And so that's enough to sort of feel like a family in most contexts. And so I don't exactly feel the social urge to you know, have a bunch more people come around and a bunch more people in my life, you know, which in that way I feel better than if I were just part of a couple forum that just, you know, did all the holidays and did all the regular stuff just as one other person. Like, that would make me feel pretty miserable. But I have to say that I'm not exactly sure that I think that what we're doing, like, it's different, you know, it's definitely different than where I came from, and it's different than regular American society, but it definitely doesn't feel enough. It's like necessary but not sufficient.
So then I'm curious, it sounds like you've more or less succeeded in creating a chosen family then in your life.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's absolutely. I mean, but again, I'm older. Like, I absolutely, like, I have no problem with the fact that anarchism, you know, came out of punk rock for me. And I have no problem with the fact that, you know, to some greater or lesser degree, my anarchism has looked like a practice of living in anarchy with other people. But you know, I know that I'm not most people, and you know, most people don't have the privilege and the connections and the time doing this that I do.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious then, with your chosen family, we can call it that, like, what do you do then on Christmas?
Well, Christmas, actually, we don't practice. I've never been a big fan. It doesn't have the same feeling that Thanksgiving does in terms of having a big meal or any of that. So for me, you know, especially because it's such a religious holiday, I like it to feel cold and bleak and miserable. The only celebration I did this year was I went to a Chinese restaurant.
Ah, yeah. So for me, like, actually, what I've been doing the past few years is working. And actually, I wrote one anonymous comment about that, working on holidays, right? But for me, like, my line of work is supporting people with disabilities, developmental disabilities. And what I actually enjoy about doing that work, especially on Christmas, is that usually these people don't understand or don't necessarily care about this concept of Christmas and holidays and all the things associated with it. And so what... usually, you know, the other coworkers I have try to do something special for Christmas, but I like it that we all kind of are operating on the assumption of, like, it's a day, we're trying to make it special, and this is something that we're creating. It's not necessarily inherently a special day, but we just work with what we have and how we're feeling and what's going on in the moment, and maybe and hopefully it will be a fun, fulfilling experience for everyone involved. And I love that kind of attitude, of that way of approaching it, instead of assuming that Christmas is inherently a family fun, you know, blah, 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 saccharine day, instead of, like, assuming that we create it any way we want. And, you know, we're just working with people that have changing moods and needs and all that. Yeah.
I will contrast Christmas, by the way, to Thanksgiving, where we absolutely had, you know, 15 to 20 people through the house over the day, and a big meal and all the, like, foods that we like. And you know, we definitely did that for Thanksgiving. But, you know, because of the association with Christianity, you know, it's pretty hard to get on board with any sort of, like, quote unquote, celebration.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could say with Thanksgiving that has an association with, like, European colonialism instead of Christianity.
Yeah, but, so, you know, similar to how Christmas has become very secular, you know, so has Thanksgiving. I mean, yes, of course, genocide happened, and this is a day where you can, you know, celebrate or anti-celebrate it as you so desire, or it's a day for watching football and eating, you know, turkey and potatoes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's weird. I've also noticed, like, even in my mind, sometimes I get Thanksgiving and Christmas confused, because they are, in some sense, really similar, of, like, you're supposed to get together with family and loved ones and be thankful and enjoy each other's presence and have a big meal.
No, for sure. I mean what is amazing about American culture is it really is a four-week holiday. Like, this is the time to really, you know, like, from Thanksgiving to the New Year. You know, it really is like a respite time.
Oh, yeah. Like, especially, like, the entire month of December is, like, just nonstop holidayness. And that's one thing I've noticed, like, especially this year, is, like, everywhere I go, whether it be in person, you know, interacting with people I know or don't know, and TV, radio, internet, it's everywhere. It's this constant Christmas bombardment. It's like, you just literally cannot escape it. Unless you just hide away from absolutely everyone and turn off every electronic device.
Yeah, I have to admit, this year I actually did not get bombarded with Christmas. And this is perhaps because I just, my main media form is using the web. I don't have a television or really listen to live radio.
Well, even so. Like the internet, though, and yeah, social media is bombarding with Christmas messages.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, this is an interesting question around, like, to what extent are ads successful and not successful? You know, I mostly have ad blocking on in my browsers. Mm-hmm. And when I use Facebook, which I do use, I just don't even see the parts of the screen that traditionally have advertisement on them. So I don't actually really, like, of course, I saw some, you know, ads that had red in them, but very little.
Oh, but even, like, the things that people post, though, you don't get, like, lots of pictures of various people and their Christmas things?
Sure. I guess it's about like what you choose to engage in and yeah. what you don't. Like I tend to, you know, have a lot of people who talk about, you know, Trumpian politics and the Democratic Party and, you know, just there are many obnoxious things in the world that if you choose to let them sink into your consciousness, you know, your brain would become mush.
Yeah. And so I think part of like the struggle, perhaps you could say it as an anarchist struggle for me at least, is what do you do then when you recognize that you're being surrounded by all these images of other people in society, media, et cetera, that are saying one thing, that this is what this time period is, and this is what you should be doing, and this is what you should be feeling. And then how do you confront these messages that come at you from so many different directions? So,
well, I mean, to echo something that I feel like you would say, I'm not sure confronting those things is always the best approach.
Mm. Oh, well, what kind of approach would you suggest instead?
Sometimes you bend like a reed.
No, oh, yeah. Well, in that sense, I mean, maybe with that kind of attitude, sometimes when I have gone with family, my bio family, and done the Christmas rituals and stuff, I've done it like with that kind of mindset of like, you know, this is bullshit. I don't believe in it, but you know, let's try to enjoy each other nonetheless. And sometimes that works, but it really also depends on like which particular family members too. You know, some family members enjoy more than others. Yeah. And then also my state of mind and how I'm doing my life at that time, you know, also factors in how much I can enjoy it or not.
Right.
Because also I find like in a way I don't necessarily view Christmas as bad per se. It's more like I guess the question is like, are you happy? Are you enjoying it? And are you enjoying doing that ritual or not? And yeah, that really depends on the individual and then the circumstances and all these different factors too.
Well, thank you very much for having this conversation with me.
Oh yeah, thanks for having me.
Fell in love with a tiny elf in the shape of a snowflake on Christmas Day. Snowman B-F-O-T-Y has melted away. It's sad, it's Christmas Day. Christmas at Yule time. Jingle, Rudolph, present.
Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material are available at littleblackheart.com, and news and up-to-the-minute commentary, always at anarchistnews.org.
Christmas sleigh.